Hey, everybody, it's John, and thanks to everybody who helps us out every week by going to patreon.com/stealthisbeer and throwing a couple of bucks our way so that we can mail beers to our guests and have some fun conversations resulting from that. So if you're not already, go check it out. It's patreon.com/stealthisbeer. As Cass says, a little bit goes a long way, and we appreciate the support. Now, here come the sirens.
Steal This Beer, a candid weekly discussion about beer, over beer, by a couple of guys that think about beer way too much.
Hey, y'all. It is 5 o'clock on Monday, and we are stealing beer. I am Brian Cass.
And I am not John Hall.
Or Augie Carton. We have a hall pass, and we are Augie free today. So that means that Justin and I get to do whatever the hell we want to do. I'm excited for today's episode because I have a childhood friend on the line here. And he's also brought a couple other fellows with him too. And the three of them are just, you know, like a couple beer barons, actually a few beer barons from the great state of Colorado. And while I'd love to talk about Robin and I's childhood of playing Twisted Metal and drinking Gatorade Frost and sleepovers, we're actually here to talk about, beer, Colorado, and their brew pub, the Glenwood Canyon Brew Pub. So I'd like to welcome Robin, Todd, and Jake to the show today. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hey.
Yo, how's it going?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, you were very welcome. You were very welcome. A few weeks ago, I was just texting with Robin as Justin and I were trying to find some guests, and it's been a damn long time since we either saw each other or caught up, so I thought it'd be awesome to have you guys on since, you know, there's quite the history of the place that you work at, and, we'll get into that, but you all also have just, spent a lot of time around the beer world in Colorado and beyond, so... I kind of just want to start with Robin, obviously. How did you get the bug here? And, in a few sentences, what brings you roundabout to Colorado and making beer?
I kind of caught the bug, like standard to a lot of brewers through home brewing. But at the time, I was a photographer, professional photographer, doing a lot of food and beverage photography, and I had a few beer clients, and I was sort of feeling burnt out on the photography side of things, and so I was looking for a different way to go, and one of the clients asked if I wanted to work for them for a little bit, and that happened to be AC Golden, which is like Coors Craft division, pretty big company. But I knew the founder of that company, and he asked if I just wanted to get my foot in the door and work in packaging for a bit. And so I kind of went that route, and it just snowballed into a whole bunch of stuff. Stayed in Colorado for a few years, working for a few different breweries, started brewing for Rock Bottom, and then eventually moved back out east to Maine and started for Foundation Brewing Company. Worked there for a few years and then came back out west. I was kind of following my wife because she was at the time in dental school, and so she had residency out west in Seattle, and then ultimately we had already decided that we wanted to be back in Colorado, specifically Glenwood Springs, where we're at now. And so we came back to Glenwood after she was done with her dental residency, and I worked for Aspen Brewing for a little while, just brewing and packaging for them. But we lived in Glenwood, and for those that don't know, it's still like a 45-minute drive to Aspen from where we're at. And then randomly Todd, the owner of the brew pub now, he had reached out to me to see if I was interested in working for the pub. And the pub was cool because I had actually kind of like fallen in love with craft beer through the pub and other Colorado craft breweries. But I went to, we, my wife and I met in Glenwood Springs going to Colorado Mountain College. And when I turned 21, one of the first places I came to drink beer was the brew pub. And it was very different from anything that I'd had, you know, kind of your classic English style pub, but you know, they had IPAs and big red ales and browns and stouts and stuff. And so I came here regularly, getting growlers and drinking pints here, and then had left. But then when Todd told me that they were looking for a brewer, I was like, this is crazy. Kind of a full circle for my like brewing career and my like whole introductory to craft beer. So it was a no brainer when he asked me. I mean, I wanted to make sure that it was the position I wanted, but the brew pub itself and the brew pub environment is kind of my jam. I love the low key qualities and minimal sales distribution impact on the job. We get to make a lot of the beers that we want to make, have a lot of fun, and kind of a tight. Just been great getting back to it.
There's just some brewers out there that are ride or die for the pub life. Man, well, Jake,
totally.
Jake, I'd like to go to you next. You know, tell us a little bit about, you know, how you wind up also here at Glenwood. You know, what is your circle around the sun here of making tasty suds?
So I was actually born and raised here in Glenwood Springs, as was my mom and stuff. So we were a long time in the valley. But as soon as I could, I got out of Glenwood. And then a few years later, I came back and I got it up. Liquor store in town, and to his credit, my manager at the time was super into beer, and I think the microbrew scene was really kicking off, and I was able to just try a bunch of really cool beers with him and go to a bunch of festivals that he kind of paid for. So I was like, he was like, it's work item, so I got to do a lot of that. And then, you know, after a while working on the kind of liquor store side, you get a little bit burnt out. So I was like, why am I just selling beer? I need to be making beer. And so I kind of took the jump when we had, my wife and I had moved to Fort Collins. I kind of just ingratiated myself with the Crooked State Brew, some of the salespeople there and some of their staff room people. I just basically hounded them until they gave me a job. So I worked there for the better part of like 3 years, and it was great. I worked with a lot of people who've gone on to start their own breweries, and I learned so much there. And we got to do so much kind of unique stuff, especially at the time, a lot of Brett beers and a lot of sour stuff that was a little ahead of the time, I think, or like kind of in the big surge of sour beers in America. And then, you know, like I ended up moving again, and I ended up getting a job at like Left Hand, where I was just doing production line stuff, and it was really fun, but also at the same time kind of like draining. Every day you just do, you know, 12 solid hours, or not, you know, 10 solid hours of canning, and that'll slowly catch up to you. So I left there, and ended up really lucking out, getting kind of a great job at my favorite brewery, at Comrade Brewing Company. And those guys, Marks and David and Rio, they're still some of my best buds. And those guys, I was doing sales there, so it's really not hard to go sell, you know, some of the best beer in Denver. So it's a pretty chill job, and I just got to go around and hang out with all my favorite accounts and sell great beers. And then kind of leading to coming back to Glenwood, COVID happened, and my daughter came. My daughter was born probably, not probably, 12 weeks early. So it was just a little intense in our lives. And so we kind of were just figuring out what to do. And we just decided to head back home to Glenwood. And we have a really nice base here with a lot of family. My wife's family's from here as well. So it was really nice landing here. And so for about a year of being back, I kind of was stay-at-home dad because my wife has a real job. So I was home and taking care of my kiddo. And then Todd Robin had just gotten that. We just got a one-head wild goose system. And I have a pretty extensive background of really, really, really great and really, really bad canning and bottling lines. So they called me and I kind of got my foot in the door by just helping out canning. And now I kind of just, I wear every hat. So sales, canning, bottling, brewing, you name it. We do it all. So that's basically how I got back to Glenwood.
Awesome. Well, that brings us to the head honcho, Todd. Todd, jump on in. You've actually, started at the brew pub and left and came back. So tell us about that journey.
Yeah, totally. Well, I think that's the big thing here. I think the common thread is that, you can leave this place for a while, but it seems to always, you always seem to come back. So I grew up fairly close to Glenwood. Used to come down here as a teenager with my parents. And my dad actually got me into homebrewing when I was about 15 or 16. And remember watching the head brewer kind of bop around the place while I was drinking root beer here. And I always just remember saying to myself, man, one day I'm going to have that guy's job. And one day, I want to be a brewer. So that was kind of the impetus behind getting going on brewing. And yeah, I went off to college and studied business mostly just because I wasn't much of a mathematician or engineer type. But then I kind of did my own self-study in entomology and microbiology with the head professor of microbiology at this small college I went to. And just kind of messed around a lot with home brews. And then as soon as I graduated, literally my folks had moved from one town to another, and I came into the Glenwood Canyon Brewing Company and just started, just sort of kept bringing beers to the head brewer at the time and kind of just kept pestering him. And finally he was like, yeah, I'll give you a job. So started working here right after college in 2000 and never really looked back. One of the assistant brewers got in a pretty bad automobile accident, which sort of changed my trajectory here as sort of the lead brewer. And then after about 5 years, headed to Firestone Walker, just doing, brew shifts there. That's when we were running out there at about 30,000 barrels a year. We were running, probably at the time, 6 days a week with a pretty tight brew schedule. And yeah, I was there for three years and then kind of left there, came back to Colorado again. Did some consulting, finished up my diploma in brewing with the Institute of Brewing and Distilling, and was working on another startup out in Washington State that fell through, and kind of rerouted our moving truck back to Firestone in a new capacity, working under Matt and Dustin and Ali as the QC brewer out there. So I was kind of the liaison between the lab and the brewers. But more than anything, just brewing, filtering, cellar work. We kind of did everything out there. And I was pretty heavily involved in just special projects, some analysis. I did a lot of the yeast harvesting and pitching work. And then I got the phone call from the head brewer here, and he retired and said, you want the keys? And I said, sure. So I came back. And then, yeah, that was in 2014. And then I ended up buying the place with the chef and another guy that bought the real estate in 2022. So
that's awesome. I was going to say, that's quite the circle. There's not too many people that started a brewery, leave it for that long a time, and then come back and buy the joint.
Did you overlap with Jeffers while you were in Firestone?
Yeah. So
yeah,
he was there, kind of a short stint. But yeah, I know Jaffers. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause he was another one that kind of left and kept coming back after some time away. So he's been on this show many, many times. Right. Right, Cass.
Yeah. Yeah. We should try to get him back even even though he's no longer.
Oh, he's in retirement right now. So yeah,
He could talk. He could talk about his retirement. And...
Oh no, he would be great to get back on for sure.
I'm sure he's still a great player.
Oh, yeah, yes. I worked mostly. I didn't work a whole lot with him because he was kind of in this weird transition sort of stage with Firestone. But I did work with Melody, his ex-wife, because she was actually the director of the lab for quite a while I was there.
Oh, cool. Okay. Yeah, I don't know her. All right, Cass, what brings us together?
Oh, what brings us together on Steal This Beer is, well, it's the back gas. Black glass. I'm not gonna get into Augie's whole spiel. Y'all listen to this show, but you know, we try to figure out what the hell is in it. And we're gonna go through, and it's awesome having, you know, three guys on the production side that, you know a variety of beers here. And I will say,
I should have sent you guys more beer. I didn't realize it was gonna be three folks on. I would have sent two of each of these, but hopefully you can do with the
pretty
what
good
I sharing
the
beer. Okay, great.
Yep. Well, you were very kind to us in this afternoon, you know. Nothing too high ABV here. At least for the first beer. And you know, to me, I'm getting a lot of crispiness here, a little spiciness, and you know, this kind of weird grapiness that, you know, I always pull out of certain pilsners and certain lagers. It's also like a hoppiness to it as well, fruit forward. And, you know, obviously you gentlemen have it in your glass too. Kennedy knows what it is, but, you know, what are y'all picking up off of it?
I definitely thought there was a little bit of hoppiness. It finishes really dry palate. Mm. Like that. It definitely feels lighter.
Yeah, light and dry. I almost think it has like some subtle like spice elements that are reminiscent of like almost like some Belgian phenolics, but I wouldn't call it that. But you know, in that realm, it kind of has that kind of spice to it that I enjoy. Yeah, it's easy drinking for sure.
And it's spicy.
Yeah, it's a nice one. Nice dry finish. I get kind of a little. I don't know if it's maybe a little oxidative stress, but almost like a little bit of a pineapple note to it,
kind of like a stinky fruit, like a little sulfury.
Yeah, I'm guessing. I mean, I don't know if I don't want to call out the style on it, but I'm guessing one way. I won't say now.
Yeah, you should. You could.
What if you're right?
I mean, I'm guessing it's probably like a cold IPA, but maybe not hoppy enough to be in the IPA realm.
Well, as always, as we always pointed out, Augie and Hall once thought a Pilsner, Czech Pilsner, was a milk stout. So, you know, if you're thinking it's cold IPA, some of us are thinking this is, you know, crispy Pilsner, something like that. I mean, we'll all be baffled when we peel this foil off the can.
No, you guys are right in the realm so far. You're not far off.
Oh, it's really awesome, especially for my first beer of the day after doing some yard work outside. This is... You know, this is the perfect one to chug to quench your thirst, and you know, you maybe grab another one after that before you get into something else. But
it's a drinkable beer for sure.
Well, we always like to tell a story. Yeah, we always like to tell a story of where you see yourself drinking this. You know, as I said, this is something I want to have. I think, you know, backyard barbecue. I want to drink a couple of these before we're even getting into the appetizers, and you know, maybe we're drinking this all afternoon, maybe we're not, but it's definitely a perfect party starter. You know, where do you guys see yourself enjoying this?
Yeah, I definitely with some food, you know, like you said, it's a good starter beer, but I think it'd go well with barbecue. That sounds pretty damn good.
And for Glenwood, we have two fantastic rivers, so I judge everything by how good it would be on the river. And this is a perfect raft beer for sure. I could drink quite a few of these.
Yeah, I was out slinging a chainsaw this morning, cutting some limbs off a pretty hefty tree, and I don't know, this is a pleasant surprise.
Are you calling it a chainsaw beer? I thought you weren't supposed to mix chainsaws and alcohol.
Well, you're not, but you gotta wait, you know.
You have
after the chainsaw.
It's after the chainsaw. chainsaw thing. I want to go back to that spice real quick. Do you guys think that that's from the hops? You guys think that's from the malt?
Well, he's mentioning saws, so maybe we got some saws up in here.
Yeah, it's in that realm. I almost think there's some contribution from whatever yeast is being used in this beer too. To me, like Todd said, I don't know if it's intentional oxidative stress or if it's just a unique strain that produces a little more spice character.
When you say intentional oxidative stress, you know, Kenny and I are not brewers, so we're not going to claim that we know what the hell that means. So, you know, for the thieves at home, maybe you want to elaborate on that real quick before we do the reveal, because I do think if you think it's intentional, you know, I'd love to know a little more about it.
Definitely not intentional. I don't think that's ever intentional. Unintentional.
Unintentional.
I think with, you know, specific hoppy beers, heavy oxidative stress, you get kind of that, you know, cardboard thing going on. I don't get that at all. And I certainly, you know, I don't want to throw that out there, but I do get like a slight, like, yeah, fruit or pineapple kind of thing, which I sometimes get from oxidative stress, but that could also be just the varietal itself a little bit or the yeast potentially.
Well, yeah, I'm guessing it's the yeast. Yeah, I'm guessing it's the yeast on this one because this is from Allagash Brewing Company. This is their Surf House Summer Lager. It's a new seasonal that just came out. So speaking of rivers, they're saying, like a little home by the water, this lager is built for easygoing relaxation. Brewed to be super crisp and drinkable, dry hop for subtle tropical notes. Take a break with Surf House. And it has, let's see, the hops are something called Ella. Do you guys know Ella hops?
Yeah, Ella's. It's funny that they have that hop. That was one of the main hops we used in our flagship IPA at Foundation Brewing Company.
Okay, so that's another Portland brewery right down the street.
Yeah, right? That's right. It's right across the street.
Right across the street. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that's a single hop Belgian lager yeast, grains main malt, house pale malt, Buck Farms flake corn. I'm guessing that's something in Maine. Carapils and rice hulls. It is 5.5% alcohol, so a little bit higher than I would expect from a beer like this. But yeah, this is a easy drinking, good, making me look forward to summer beer.
I just want to say thank you for sending an Allagash beer, because it's one of the things I miss greatly about Maine. Everything from them is really fantastic, and this is definitely no exception. Super good.
They don't distribute in Colorado?
No, they don't.
They were briefly here in that first expansion, and I've heard Rob Todd talk on a couple things where they decided to pull back out of a few states, and Colorado being one. So it was a real sad day when that happened.
Yeah.
I think, I don't know, I'm speculating, but, you know, Colorado is where Blue Moon originated, and that's in direct with White. Yep. So
it might be hard. Yep. We all know White's much better than that. So,
oh, yeah.
And to be fair, Robin, I did not let him know that you even brewed in Maine. So I think this is kind of awesome that we had beer that I don't know. You might have had that. Did they make something like this back in the day? You know, maybe it's like a test batch.
It was called, what was it called? There was something last summer that was a seasonal. So this is like a play. They're starting this whole, you guys know the Haunted House. They had a black IPA called Haunted House. That was the first one we started. And then this house label is the like the brand, I guess, that they're spinning off. So there's a few different house beers, but there was one last summer, Cass, I know what you're talking about, that was pretty similar to this beer, but this is a little bit different.
So, when I lived in Maine and I was working at Foundation, they hadn't really done too many lagers, you know, they hadn't even started canning at that point. That was right after I left Maine, and they had a beer only available on premise called House. I'm sure they still make that.
That was like a table beer.
Oh yeah that's like a table beer. You could buy like cases and bottles.
Yeah, totally. And this beer is for me, now that I know what the beer is, obviously, but like it actually has a lot of the same yeast characters that I remember from having that beer.
Oh yeah, there's some commonality between all of this. Gas can attest to this. Augie almost always, and Hall too, to an extent, almost always picks out when it's an Allagash beer on the show.
That's definitely cool. Wasn't guessing that.
You definitely call it Belgian yeast. So you,
yeah, it has that strength. It has that spice, but yeah, it's like interesting that they're making lager with a Belgian lager strain.
Well, here, and I'm glad we could share it with you gentlemen.
Thank you.
So what do you guys make style-wise? I don't think we've talked about, like, if I'm going to the group of what am I going to get a summer lager, 5.5%? Am I going to get a hazy? What am I going to drink when I'm at your brew pub?
We really, well, Robin and Jake really changed the game. We had a couple brewers before them. We started getting into more and more into lager brewing. Obviously, it's kind of a general trend in the industry right now, especially for brewers. But we brew beer for brewers. And we've got a lot of lagers on right now, but you know, we do hoppy lagers, old IPAs, really IPAs. We're gonna mess around with some New Zealand stuff this summer. We've done some trials with a lot of thialized stuff, which we kind of tend to do the trial and then steer back to the hops to do the work. But yeah, we're doing it pretty much everything.
Yeah, I think as a brew pub, you know, we've always got a couple offerings that satisfy people that aren't following trends. So we've always got a stout on. We've almost always got an amber or red of sorts on. But then the majority of our draft list is traditional lagers, hoppy lagers, IPAs. And some hazies as well, but yeah, we tend to lean towards West Coast clear IPAs and clear beers. We're always going for drinkability, and having something that's nice and dry and crisp is generally the route that we're leaning.
Nice.
On the grist side of things and the beers you guys are making over there, are you sourcing maybe some local malt, or are you guys kind of pulling from, you know, kind of the bigger houses like Malt Europe and BSG and places like that?
So I would say for the last almost year and a half, we've been trying probably every single Pilsner malt that's out there. So we've been on this quest to just, you know, I think more become familiar with everything. Because I think different beer styles in particular, you can really lean into base malts. So we have been really trying to familiarize ourselves with that. And we buy like a pallet of Malt Euro, and we use that in like four different beers. And then we've tried every Weirmann product. We've tried a bunch of Gambrinus. We've tried literally everything. We find ourselves coming back to a local one, local malted, floor malted. We really like Leopold Brothers. Their Pilsner, which has become a little harder for us to get as they're no longer distributed by BSG. So we don't get it as often as we'd like. And we have an upcoming beer with another local maltster, Troubadour Malt. And we're going to do a big Munich wine with that. And so they've got a really cool idea where they think roast thyme also equates to more aromatics and stuff. So they really try and get you your roast malts relatively quickly after being roasted. Thinking that just like coffee or anything, that they degrade pretty quickly. So we've got some pretty fun ideas coming up with some of these local maltsters, and we've even been sourcing some local hops too. So we do try and do some Colorado centric stuff, but I would say the majority of our stuff is probably North Star from RAR, and we do an extensive Weirmann. Yeah.
Is the Leopold Brothers, is that the same as the distillery? Isn't there a distillery?
Yeah, actually, it's really cool. Okay. If you ever get the chance and you're in Denver, they're doing the traditional floor malting. They're hand turning it over. They're like, the guys there work really hard, and they make a really expressive, clean malt that we really enjoy.
We need to have them on, Justin. That sounds awesome.
Yeah. No, I know they're liquor. I haven't eaten spirits, but I didn't know they were doing malt too. That's awesome.
And I want to backtrack real quick because I did lose internet connection and I was silent for about 10 seconds. Did you say Munich wine?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, man.
What is a Munich wine? And I apologize to the thieves that I just said the W word twice, but.
No, I had the same question, guys. I was like, did I hear that? I wasn't sure.
Well, if you're familiar with Brad, he used to be the former head brewer out at Jackie O's. He makes some of the best.
Of course.
Yeah, he went on to do his own brewery out in California where he's just doing small, super small release barrel-aged beers. And one of his
first... Private press, I think.
Yeah, one of his first beers that he released was a Munich wine where it's, I think majority, not all, different types of Munich wine going for the same idea as a barley wine, but you're looking at between 12 and 16% alcohol. But... just all the descriptors and the idea behind it just seems like something we're really into, cherry and almond and toffee flavors and kind of just a similar idea to barley wine, but kind of in a different vein.
Is it lagered or no?
It's not. I think they are.
Well, it depends on your definition of lager.
Yeah,
I guess it is. It is a big beer. You know, we're going for 12 to 14%. So we will be laying it, quote unquote, laying it down or just letting it rest or lager for a while, several months before we serve it. But that's largely related to the fact that it's a higher alcohol malt for beer.
Oh, it sounds delicious. This is going to be something you guys package, or is this going to be something that is strictly available on draw at the bar?
No, we'll package a small quantity of it, but we'd have to send it to you for you guys to try it.
Just because we sell
all of our beer made here is literally sold out the front door. Like, we don't have any off-premise accounts.
We have one. We're at the local ski mountain.
Yeah, we got our local ski.
Nice.
Is the local ski mountain like super vintage, or is it just like this something out of a hot tub time machine?
It's called Sunlight Mountain Ski Resort. It's the cheapest day pass in the state, and they also currently have the oldest lift ski lift in the state as well.
Oh, that's terrifying.
It is. And you spend a third of your day on the lift because it takes a little while longer. But that lets you drink your beer on the way up.
Yeah,
so it's not too fast.
It's also one of the cheapest bars in the town.
Well, that sounds great. That sounds
red.
That sounds like red in my eyes.
So you're a brew pub. What's the food component you guys got to pair with all these beers you're making?
Yeah, we kept the food component more or less the same over the years. There's been some small tweaks. We don't really mess around with it because that is our big revenue driver is food, because we're one of probably 20 or 25 restaurants in town. So we kind of have, we got a really great thing going. We're pretty centrally located in downtown. We have huge capacity. So we have like 250 seats. So that allows us to really play with the beer and have fun with that. And the food is, you know, what really kind of gets people through the door. Although, you know, we're constantly trying to make the beer more and more appealing.
Trying to change that. We want the beer to be a draw as well. But
And I would say we're very much, this place was started out with a lot of the English vibes. So there's a lot of burgers, fish and chips. Like, the food is staples that you'll find at most brew pubs. We do high quality, and we definitely can turn out a lot of people, which is pretty impressive. Our kitchen is very good.
I love it. I love it. I'm just jealous. This is not around the corner from the house.
Yeah. Hey, can I just say I'm really stoked that you asked about what malt we use before what hops we use?
Who cares about hops?
Yeah, malt. I mean, I love hops, but I feel like malt is kind of becoming
malt sexy. Fancy.
Yeah.
Malt is very sexy. And when you have so much available out there, and like you say, you guys are farting around with it a lot, right? You know,
yeah,
there's
yeah.
so
I mean,
much.
We try to put a little bit in every beer, generally.
A little bit of malt.
I was going to say, speaking of malt, what about beer number? Well, it's number four today.
Is there malt in beer too? I don't know.
Well, we'll get into the second beer here. You guys, I hope, have already been sipping on the second beer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. It's quite a bit larger than the first.
It's different.
A little bit of orange. I'm getting like Todd had mentioned it, but yeah, nice kind of malt backbone, little sweetness, but doesn't feel cloying or anything.
Getting like some deep dark fruit, you know?
Yeah, it has that like perception of sweetness, but it's not an actually sweet beer.
No. Develop on that, because I did find it like sweet, like, you know, somebody had poured orange juice in a mimosa type sweetness here. And again, I get this just kind of dark fruit and a little funkiness to it as well. And I don't know if that's coming from the yeast or not.
I kind of got that too. Almost like in the past beer, little like, I don't know if it's a phenolic-y thing going on in there, but I did pick up some little bit of funkiness.
I mean, Kennedy's known to throw a banger on a second beer here, so we could be drinking some sort of 14% Belgian quad in a can right now. We won't know until
not quite that big, but yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I was definitely getting a little bit of like caramel and toffee and some a little stickiness in my mouth, but it doesn't feel overtly sweet.
Yeah, I guess what I meant by perception of sweetness rather than actually being sweet is it doesn't like coat my mouth and hang out or linger long like a big stout does that has a lot of residual sweetness, you know, but it has some of those like toffee notes and dark dried fruit character, but it doesn't, it's not annoying. It doesn't hang out too long.
I get pineapple on this one. I wasn't pulling that out, but you know, I was thinking about that from the last beer, just staring at the Allagash can here. But I get kind of that pineapple juice when you just smell a glass of the pineapple juice. You cut the fresh pineapple. It's kind of, you know, stinky, funky sweetness, not in a bad way whatsoever. But yeah, very nice.
Yeah. Yeah. Also, a little bit of alcohol as it warms up. So.
Yeah,
I would guess it is a little bit bigger, a lot of bit bigger than the Allagash Surf House.
And I pulled this out of the fridge probably about 45 minutes before the show because I didn't want to leave the microphone. So I had it sitting below here, but it's still very much cold on my end. But I'm going to save a little bit in the can, let it warm up because I want to see what it does, you know, another 30 minutes from now, because I feel like this is something that we would be sipping on, you know.
So where are you drinking this, Cass? What's the right setting for this beer?
I don't know. This kind of beer, and I want to drink, this is exactly where I want to drink this, and I wish Robin and I could do this together. I want to drink this at Robin's house in his parents' bar in his little, in the den that he had, the house when he used to live around the corner from me. I feel like if we were older and he was still living there, we'd be by the fireplace swirling this in a chalice. and waxing poetic about the old days.
Yeah.
Nice.
That's where I'm having it.
There'd probably be whiskey involved too. I feel like that's
Oh yeah, we're having this. We're definitely having this after we've already had too many. One more. We're just doing one more.
Yeah, this does feel like a nightcap, a very nice end to your day. Like you've got a little bit of a buzz and you're like, I need one more. This is probably more than you need, but this is the right move.
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking like a definitely a spring. I mean, this is a great spring beer when it's, especially out here in Colorado, when it's still kind of chilly at night. Maybe you're, you know, over at the hot springs pool or in your hot tub. And just like, yeah, it's definitely kind of a nightcap, but not like a, you know, winter warmer, but like a spring one.
I hope we haven't gone down like too much of a rabbit hole. I'm curious.
I know. Well, you guys didn't hold back on that first one, so I'm guessing you're not gonna hold. I mean, this first one was so kind of unique, you know, like so much going on in there, and so I'm guessing this one's probably got something up its sleeve too. So,
not too much actually. This is from Stone Brewing. This is their delicious IPA, but it's the hazy version they just came out with. So what? It's 7.2% alcohol. I think the delicious stuff is gluten reduced. So they put some enzyme in there that reduces the gluten to nearly zero.
And it's 7.2? It's 7.2%. Wow.
7.2. Hops are Sabro, Eldorado, and Azaka. Notes of peach, candy, orange, vanilla, and pineapple. It kind of says, overall, they say juicy, creamy, full-bodied, hazy IPA. Pleasant finish that makes this very easy to drink.
I think we missed the mark.
We sure as fuck did. Canned in January and good until May, so it's got a kind of a short shelf life on it. But I enjoyed it. As Augie said, I'm not mad at it.
Very I didn't good. Really pick up the Sabro.
Usually, it wasn't offensive.
Yeah, Sabro. Usually Sabro, we get this like really big, you know, coconut. At least the Sabro that we last used was like this super huge coconut. This one wasn't. I didn't get the coconut coming through, but definitely the.
What yeast? I got the vanilla and orange. So,
did we know the yeast? Just did you mention that? I'm sorry if I.
They don't see the yeast on the website, but I'm guessing it's some, you know, house stone yeast. I don't know, but they do the. I'm pretty sure this is the gluten reduced. I don't know what they put in it. There's some. I don't know. If it's not a. It's like some kind of enzyme that strips out.
Well, now you guys have to make gluten-free beer at the pub. That's, you know, gluten-free
Munich wine.
Gluten
reduced.
Yeah, we've been messing around with Clarex pretty much on a lot of our beers. Kind of curb that gluten a little bit.
Yeah, they say it doesn't have an effect on flavor and body and stuff. That's been our experience, really, but.
And we have
so a you brew it with you brew okay. with malt, and then you add this thing, and it does Clarex its thing.
Clarex basically their claim is that it reduces the gluten content, you know, below what is it, 10 ppb?
I think it's 20.
Yeah, 10 or 20.
20 parts per billion. Wow. Okay.
But we never really advertise it as such because we don't want to, you know, be liable for it. So.
Right.
It is. We are in a weird area though, where we have some really intense elite athletes. Like we have
health conscious folks.
So we try and always offer like a lower alcohol beer, and then like almost always have a few gluten reduced beers. But like there's a lot of people who take that as a dietary constraint. Maybe not like like they don't have celiacs or something, but
they don't have an allergy or a reaction,
the sensitivity.
Yeah, it's more right. It's more like dietary and like working towards a goal of physicality. So we just try and offer that for some of the folks around here, and it seems to be well received.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I should say that this beer is not advertised on the Stone website or on the can as gluten-free or gluten-reduced, but just from my own personal history with this beer, that's what it is. So anyway.
It is 100% vegan. Right, it says it's vegan. Vegan and contains wheat, as it says on the can. Yep. That was a fantastic one. Way to scratch the heads. I wonder how Augie and Hall would have handled it. Maybe we can trick them.
I don't know.
Because neither of them are going to listen to this episode, so we can totally serve them the same beer. Well, he does. He does have the beers. So
he has the beer, yeah.
He could do it. I want to get back to the pub because we didn't really touch on the history of the pub. Let's get into that. Tell us a little bit about that, Todd. You as Robin told me, he's just like, well, he's like, Todd's the historian here. So, I mean, we're talking about one of the oldest brew pubs in Colorado, and you know, a lot of breweries that started in the 90s, a lot of them are still here, which is awesome. And you know, I hope every brewery that opened in the 90s still stays open, because there is that that history and there's that story, because look at where we are now with all the craziness in craft beer. Nobody was thinking about pastry stouts and hazy IPA in, you know, the late 90s. But, you know, tell us a little bit background on the pub and, you know, how it came to be. And, you know, again, you know, kind of circle back on how it landed in your hands.
Yeah, totally. So basically, the second oldest brew pub in Colorado after the Wincoop Brewing Company is a little brewery down in Durango called Carver Brewing Company. And so the two brothers at Carver Brewing Company circled up with two people here in Glenwood Springs with coincidentally the last same name, Carver. And they basically started this business back in 1996. And so we're in what was until last Thursday, called the Hotel Denver. So we're in the lobby area of the Hotel Denver, which is right across the street from the train station in downtown Glenwood, which, if you're not familiar, is one of the stops on the California Zephyr Amtrak, you know, rail route. So,
oh, that's awesome. Yeah.
So they basically got together. I think this, as the story goes, the Carvers from Glenwood Springs were down in Durango at the Carver Brewing Company. And they were at the time sort of pandering, you know, putting a business into the Hotel Denver that they had purchased. And weren't quite sure what they wanted to do. And we're having a beer at Carver in Durango, Carver's Brewing in Durango, and got together with Bill and Jim and decided that this would be a good spot for another brew pub. So, the original brewmaster from here, Ken Jones, he came from Carver's and up here, helped install a lot of the infrastructure in the building with Bill and Jim, and then they got the equipment on this crazy auction, and we still have one piece of that equipment, which is our hot liquor tank, which is it's a wood clad on the outside, stainless steel on the inside, but wood clad and insulated.
That's awesome.
It's the ugliest.
That's so cool.
Tank you've ever seen, and so we hired it out. and one day we might change it, but maybe not. It just keeps rocking. So, but yeah, that's kind of the history.
The system that was originally in the place, who made that, you know, going back to the 90s, I can't imagine there was too many people making equipment. And if this thing had wood all around it, I can only imagine what the rest of like the mash tuns and the, you know, brew kettle look like.
Yeah. So here's what happened, right? Is we had the original brew house and the serving tanks and some of the fermenters were these old, just English, you know, wood clad tanks. They got them in here and realized right away how much of a headache it was. So they immediately sold off a bunch of it to some of the people that were kind of getting into the industry and made a bunch of money on it, literally turned around and bought a specific mechanical brew house.
Oh, nice.
And for a while we kept the old wood clad serving tanks, which were basically Grundy tanks. And I don't know if you guys are familiar with those old school Grundys, but they basically almost like a tri-clover style clamp fit top on them. Well, at one point they had one of those suckers came off under pressure, and I think that was the day that they were like, okay, we're going to all new, you know, specific mechanical serving tanks, bright tanks, fermenters, and everything. So they updated everything back at the time, and we've pretty much been rocking the same equipment. I did do a brew house upgrade in 2016 after I got back in 2014. We put in a new boil kettle, and I rerouted a bunch of the lines, put in some variable frequency drives so that the work transfer was smooth and pretty. we were going through this old grant and pumping stuff all over the place, deadheading stuff, oxidizing the shit out of it. So I did kind of a major overhaul in 2016 on the brew house. But really, it's all kind of stayed the same. The one big thing is we have these like crazy beer transfers from the brew house, which sits on one half of the restaurant, and we transfer through these stainless steel lines up over the heads of all the customers and over. So we've got kind of some constraints. We've only got a couple, what do we have? Three conicals. Yeah.
It's three conicals.
So all of our harvesting and yeast collection has to be carefully planned with our production schedule. Cause the other fermenters are sort of these dish bottom fermenters, but everything seems to, you know, I mean, we've won a lot of awards back in the day. These days we're winning less, but that's just because the competition's growing, I think. But yeah, I mean, we can make world-class beer here. It's just got to work a little harder and plan a little better. So
you don't want anybody having a burst pipe over their fish and chips as you guys are transferring suds over. And this stone beer now tastes like a creamsicle pop.
That was one of the notes on there, creamsicle. Yeah, so
I didn't get that when it was freezing cold, but you know, now that it's warmed up and
Does it specify anywhere in your guys' notes on hops, or did I miss that as part of the conversation?
So, Sabro.
Oh, that's right, Sabro. And then what was
Sabro, El Dorado, and what was the other one? Azaka, okay. I think. Yeah.
Azaka.
This is going to make me drink IPA the rest of the afternoon, though, now.
You can't go back.
It's almost dinner time, Cass. It's almost
Well, do we have a letter, Justin, to read?
No, I was going to save a letter for our regular episode. So we can wrap up here.
We can put a bow on it. So this is the point of the show where we kind of let you guys direct people to come drink your lovely ales and lagers. How far are you guys from Denver? You know, what is the path of least resistance to get out to the pub so people can enjoy the beers and, you know, have a nice meal and maybe hit this sketchy ski slope?
So we're really lucky in our location. We're about 3 hours west of Denver, give or take traffic. Then we're also at the base of what we call the Roaring Fork Valley, which leads up to the Aspen area. So we're like a really fun spot for anybody to come visit. We've got some of the largest outdoor hot springs pools in the world. We have amazing biking. We have amazing hiking. We have gold medal fishing water as well as rafting. So we kind of are in this epicenter of outdoor activity, and we're kind of just right off the highway. So the best part is you can just get you literally get off the plane at DIA and you're on basically I-70, and you can take that all the way to Glenwood Springs. So it's really easy to get here, and it's a worthwhile trip for anybody. I mean, there's some really fun stuff to do here. I highly recommend it.
I'm on my way.
That sounds awesome. Yeah. Booking the flight now.
And social media wise, where can they find you guys?
We find us on Instagram at Glenwood Canyon. .com I guess what the handle is Glenwood Canyon
Brew
Pub. Yep.
We're not good at social media, sorry.
neither are we.
Same.
Yeah, we're not.
Yes, where can they find us?
We're not on X, formerly known as Twitter.
Nah, we don't fuck with that shit either.
We're on Facebook for all the, you know, not socially savvy people.
Well, we have people that listen all over the damn country. So if you did not know about the Glenwood Canyon Brew Pub, now you do. And when you are skiing the slopes of Aspen, it is a hop, skip, and a jump away, or a very long car drive from Denver, which either I'd be proud to make. If you would like to write us letters, stealthisbeerpodcast@gmail.com. You can find us on all the social medias at Steal This Beer, except for the ones that we aforementioned we don't do.
Except for X Twitter.
See what we're drinking on Untappd and Patreons. We guys thank you so much for kicking in those ducats, pennies, dollars, and cents. It goes a long way to get our guests delicious suds so we can have this conversation on the show here. So that's patreon.com/stealthisbeer. If you want to kick in a few pennies, ducats, dollars, whatever. get at us.
Cheers. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for having us.